Hello and welcome to the Heal Your Heart, Heal Your Life podcast, the podcast where we talk all things trauma, healing, and how we've moved through what we've been going through in order to help and heal others as well. Today, I have a wonderful special guest with me, Natalie Kennedy. She's a soul therapist and also a and we're going to chat about her journey and where she's come from and where she's going. So throw to you, Natalie. Thank you so much for coming on today.
All right. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, I'd love to know how you started in this industry or like where the roots of your healing journey started from.
Originally started as a nurse. I trained and worked at the Alfred Hospital and, yeah, did that for about 13, 14 years. I worked overseas and all of that. Through my nursing journey, I loved it, but I always came back to asking the question, what's the source? Mm. So I sort of... Yeah, would notice people coming in and there was they'd sort of come back with similar things, similar, and the origin seemed to sort of be something that was around that particular area of the body. So, yeah, I started to question that. I then had, you know, kids and did all that sort of stuff. Mm. And that brought up a whole lot of other traumas that I'd sort of blocked out and various things in my life. There's a lot of sexual trauma and different sort of things like that. So yeah. I started to work with that and discovered a mediumship.
Oh, yeah.
So I did train in NLP. I sort of branched slowly. I'm a bit of a science-based person. So yeah. I did neuro-linguistic programming, craniosacral therapy, and then I sort of fell into a mediumship, which was completely different for me. So I discovered in that I was always, if I did readings, it was always about the person and about, it was more from the healing side than sort of the reading side. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of how I started, yeah.
I'd love to know when you said that you're having kids kind of brought things up to the surface for you. Was there a specific moment where something came up that you go, you know, there's more to this than what meets the eye, or I need to delve further into this?
Yes. Sort of, there was probably, I had a particular behavior that was quite destructive, and anger and things that sort of, I was my biggest sort of, I'd never wanted children and I fell pregnant and on the pill, all of that. So it was a bit of a shock.
Yeah.
But, I started to sort of, I just had this sense that I couldn't gift what I was or the trauma part of me to my children. So I sort of went, okay, now I need to start to walk a path where I am, healing myself. Up until then, I didn't really want to know. I had blocked out a lot of my memories of trauma from when I was a very young child, so I had a chunk of memories that were missing, like sort of 7-8 years. And so there were things that I'd sort of put in place to ensure that I just continued living life quite, very without any care for anything really. So, so the kids brought up the sense that I just couldn't gift them my crap, I suppose.
Definitely. I feel like that's a universal experience where we go through trauma or sexual trauma and the memory blocks it out, and then there's this part of us that goes, you know, I don't want to go back there, and I'm just gonna kind of, you know, push it away and try not to let it impact myself, which is protective and completely understandable. So do you think when you decided to, you know, when you had your children and it kind of spurred you on to heal that, was it about kind of healing the generational trauma down the line for you so that it wouldn't continue?
Initially it wasn't, but I discovered the more I went into it, it was about stopping definitely a particular generational abuse cycle that was in there, so the trauma from that. That did come up. So,
can I ask what the cycle was?
So the cycle was the abuse from mother to daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So
a bit of a mother wound.
So it was a mother wound. Yeah, definitely. And sort of a lot of scary behaviours. My mum was a manic depressant, diagnosed manic depressant. And she was an interesting lady, very, very strong, but also very wounded.
Yeah.
And, yeah, she used to sort of have a lot of behaviours that were pretty traumatic for us kids.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I actually had those behaviours. So, and like I think most generational things, we tend to, if you don't look at it and change it, you just pass it on to the next generation, just like you brought up. So that definitely, I suppose, you know, that wording definitely was probably the underlying inspiration to do it, because I want my kids to be like me. And that's the behaviour sort of side of things.
We're definitely, when we're 0 to 8 years old, we're little sponges and we just take in our surroundings. And even without realising it, the good and the bad, sometimes we can take on these coping mechanisms or ways of dealing with, big emotions like depression, things like that. And I find you either follow the pattern or you go the complete polar opposite way, but it seems to be one of two. And I think they're both related to like the pain and the trauma of having to go through that and witness that in a parent who's like your main caregiver. And things just seem to come up. And then especially having your own children, I can see why that would bring all of that back up for you. Is that the reason why you didn't want to have kids? Like, did you feel like you were protecting yourself in a way, or
I didn't want to have kids because I didn't know, I actually didn't like myself is probably the best way to say it. I really sort of, I had, and I didn't really know why. So there was a lot, like I said, a lot of anger, there was a lot of frustration, disappointment in people. I would react to things like weird, like, you know, irrational reactions. I had fears that I didn't understand. So there were things in me and there was a part of me that just didn't feel right. So, and because I didn't have memories of anything, I had nothing really to base or work from. And there was abuse from my brother. So that's the chunk of memories that I didn't have. The stuff with my mum was always present. It was just created in a way that she sort of made it as though it was just natural and normal for every mother and daughter relationship.
Yeah.
So that wasn't sort of part of it. But the other stuff, it was, there was something missing in me, and I just didn't know what it was. And so in that space I was like, there's no way I want to have kids, because I didn't, I just didn't know what I was going to be offering them. I think it is a big responsibility. I personally see, you know, having kids as, I think probably nursing, you know, just go in, you're responsible for the patients. And, you know, I took that very seriously. So if I was going to have children, I was going to take that sort of responsibility seriously. And I just didn't want that.
That's fair enough, I think. And I wonder if, I know when there is abuse and things like that, often there is also a betrayal around the people around you at that time during that moment. So is that kind of what played into the mother wound as well?
Eventually I saw it as that, I probably worked more with betrayal in the last 10 years of my life more than at the beginning. That didn't show itself sort of until I'd probably cleared out a lot of the bigger sort of reactive emotional states is probably the best way to say it, I think, for me. So, which I think, you know, like you'd know this, everybody heals differently and we follow our path differently. And, so most of my sort of stuff was probably based around the ability for me to bring my children up you know, with the best version of myself and recognizing that I am human and I fail and I pick myself up and try again. So, I've always sort of, wanted to create my kids in that way, and I've been very open and honest with them. So, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like having children is a bit of a test because it's like a 24/7 job, right? You can't just walk away. You're having a bad day. Like, you've got to be there.
No, you can't.
So I can see how that would bring up a lot of emotion and a lot of, like, if you're already going through a whole heap of stuff, like anger and things like that. And I can see how when you explained your trauma, it was like, because you didn't have the memories associated, you didn't really have anything to base it off. So it's just like, am I just an angry person? Am I just a bad person, or am I overreacting here, or, you know, what is it specifically? And then coming back to just that blame of self, as opposed to being able to kind of go deeper on that and just sitting there for a little while. But I find when we push emotions down, or when we have suppressed something, whether we, like, a lot of the time it's unconsciously, these things do pop up at other random points in our life. Like, little things will trigger us back to that same feeling. And then suddenly we are expressing all this anger, or expressing all of this. And it's completely normal and natural, because it's our wound trying to find a way back to be healed from the suppression and being buried deep.
Absolutely. I work, probably one of the biggest ways I work now is work with the aspects. And I believe that we, you know, from that young age, we create ourselves, or this is what I've discovered on my journey mainly. Mm. And it's, you know, well, you're always evolving with it. But I discovered that there's aspects within me that I had created at different various ages. And I find that comes up when I do work with people, because I'll go back to a certain age and, you know, get visited by a younger version of themselves where they are still that age, and they stopped growing and created, like, they became the protector and the defender.
Yeah.
Yep. So from that particular trauma, whether it's a repeated sort of, you know, that not good enough, repeated words or actual physical trauma or whatever, however it happens, but we create these highly intelligent aspects. So yeah, and you've got to get, they're the ones you've got to work with and say, you know what, you don't need to protect me anymore, I'm here, I'm strong, and how about you have a rest and come back and grow up into who I am now, and we can sort of create from the place of wisdom. So yeah,
I 100% agree. I think that it's interesting how we walk around in these adult bodies, but I really think that we're just our inner child, our inner wounded child in an adult body, like trying to get around with certain things we're holding on to, whether that be, you know, anger is my form of protection. So when someone pushes this button of mine, I'm just going to get super angry because that was how I needed to cope when I was, you know, 10 years old and this bad thing happened to me. And we walk around with our wounding. We just find new ways to express it as an adult. But that little inner child is still always there and still always, like, kind of sitting on our shoulder in a way. But we don't acknowledge it until we are, I think, brought back to a certain aspect or a certain, okay, where did this anger come from? And you have to really delve back to when it first happened, I feel.
Absolutely. And I think that's, you know, when we react to things, we're reacting from the age of that child that's protecting from that particular point of vulnerability that we're trying to say, don't see that.
Yeah.
Trouble is that while we've got all the aspects there, we're attracting it. Law of attraction, you know, we're attracting all of those that they're trying to defend and prevent coming into our lives, because we're sort of holding that energy or vibration. So it keeps playing out in our life anyway. So yeah, you've definitely got to walk a path of courage and say, you know what, come and walk alongside me, and then come and tell me what you need to say. I'm here to listen. I mean, I find one of the biggest things in the healing work I do is that most of those aspects, or even the traumatized parts of us, they just want a voice. They want to be heard.
Yeah.
And it's pretty scary voicing something that creates such sadness and trauma and suffering within you, but also you're very vulnerable and you hope that, you know, the person you express it to is going to hold that space for you.
Yeah.
Very unconditional.
Definitely. Yeah, I think that it is a courage journey to go back there and actually listen to what that person, like that part of you, has to say. Because a lot of the time we shun that part of us as, like, you know, like as a form of protection, really. Like, I'm not going to let this happen to me again. So therefore that part of me that's trusting and cares about other people is just going to get put in a box and never looked at again. But that part has a part to play and will still continue trying to protect you over the years, like you said. And we still put energy towards that. And then that kind of can reflect out. Do you have an example of how that happened to you? You kind of still called in people to your space that would bring that up?
You mean like clients and things, or just myself, or
anything?
I always, now I probably call it the avoid and defend scenario.
Yeah.
So it's the ones that create us to avoid and defend.
Mm.
Avoid the situation and defend ourselves in that situation.
Yeah.
I can't think of an example if I used myself. I'm a bit stumped for that. Something might come up again.
That's all right. Feel free to call me back.
I've moved. I've worked. That was how I started to work, and then I evolved. So, you know, I did go through. I worked with a lady actually because I find even though I'm a healer, I can't heal myself on my own all the time.
Yeah, so
I've learned tools along the way. And then I get into what I call limbo stages where I can sort of get sucked into to being the trauma that I'm trying to heal from.
Yeah.
So I sort of then go and say to the universe, okay, who's going to help me with this? Who can guide me? Because that's all I see myself as, and people I go to see, they're guides, you know.
Yeah.
Everybody that comes to heal, they're the ones that have to do the work. They're the ones that are healers. So even though I always find it funny, we call ourselves healers, but we're healing ourselves, so we are healers in that way, but we are guides for others or facilitators of the healing. So but I went to see a lady, and she brought up a lot of different aspects actually that young children. I had one in me thinking about it. And the first time she presented was in a shamanic healing that I'd gone to.
Mm.
And she stood in front of me. She was about 6 years old, and she screamed at me.
Yeah.
I hate you.
Yeah.
That's all she said to me. She just kept screaming, I hate you, I hate you, I hate you.
Oh,
so that was pretty traumatic to sort of sit with. And I recognized her, I did a painting of her actually. So that was about 6 years ago. So it's taken six, nearly 7 years for her to evolve and fully come out. She was quite a strong protector. She held the place for a lot of the other smaller aspects.
Yeah. Yeah.
And anger for me is the greatest defense. Laughter and anger are what I believe used a lot by people to divert you away from their vulnerability or their suffering and trauma. So she had a lot of anger.
Mm, of course, yeah.
Yeah, so I worked with her in various stages. She sort of would step forward and then she would go. But, like, I think one of the best things, you know, people can do if they're willing to do it and on their own you can do this is just sit with that aspect.
Yeah.
That's all I did initially. I would sit with her, whether it was just my imagination that she was there. I would sense her presence and I would get quite a strong image of her from my childhood. A particular time but I really initially just all I could do was sit with her.
Mm-hmm.
She would sort of walk around me, she would scream at me, She didn't want to have a conversation. She just wanted me to know that she was really, really angry.
Just hold space for that emotion, as hard as that can be for you to just sit there and take it. But And how did that progress once you did that?
So that progressed where slowly I started to just let her speak and open up. So I went through a stage where I sort of like complete compassion. I had to move into that state of compassion.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I would just, everything she sort of said, I would say, I'm so sorry you're feeling angry. I'm so sorry you're suffering. I'm so sorry you're tired. So whatever she sort of came up with, I would just say, I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
That. Yeah. Just the sort of visiting with her and sort of allowing her to sort of come forward. And there's a lot of other things that I did. I can't remember all of them now, though. It's one thing I found really interesting is once I've worked with, and I find this with a lot of people that I've worked with, once I've done a lot of work with an aspect and they've literally come into that sense of who you are now, the nitty-gritty of all and everything is forgotten. So to try and remember and go back to all even all the trauma, I have a concept of trauma that I've experienced. I know it's there.
Yeah.
The depths and the connection and the feeling of it is no longer present. It used to debilitate me to talk about it, but it's not there anymore. So, So I can't really, I just don't remember nitty gritty things. And that is how I work. It's about working, who am I now? When I see people, each client, I don't write notes. I don't detail anything that we've done because when they come to see me, it is who they are now.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, and then the next time, who are you now? I don't care who you've been because that's not how I work. I work with who you are now.
Yeah.
And, to me it seems to work and it works for people and
I definitely think it's just so underratedly powerful to sit there and see and hear and witness either a client in front of you, yourself, or that aspect inside you. So that poor aspect's been shunned and gone, we don't want to deal with this anger, you're just going to be put in a box, put in a corner, I'm just going to pretend you do not exist for however many years. And then you finally give that child a voice. And of course they're screaming at you because they've been put in a box for 20 years. But just the act of sitting with them and acknowledging, you know, I'm sorry for what happened to you. I'm sorry that you got put in a box by someone else. And then also by me trying to sit with that feeling can be so healing and so integrative that, sometimes you don't have to go into the exact trauma memory itself in order to heal. I've heard that there's a lot of different ways you can heal, and some of the ways are just being present with that part of you that got shut down in that moment, or with that anger, with that protection part of you. So I feel like anger is such a, for me personally, when I'm angry, it's a boundary cross. It's like someone has crossed my boundary of safety and my anger has flared up to kind of protect myself. So it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just a little reminder that a boundary has been crossed and maybe we need to address that. Is that how you kind of conceptualized your anger when you worked with it?
Yeah, I think definitely it was that, you know, unsafe. You know, I don't think I had time as a child. The stuff happened from a very young age, so I don't think I had time to create boundaries.
Yeah.
But there was just a sense of probably, and how I came to be a shadow of work. I used to always, I would sit in shadow and then I would find the light or seek the light. That's sort of how I lived the first half of my life. I live it more now in the light.
Yeah.
Definitely the anger probably evolved through this child in a way where she, when I said she sort of was the main one that held the protection of everyone else, all the other aspects, because the other aspects were things like shame and you know, disappointment and resentment and all of these sort of shadow aspects.
Yeah.
And this one would stand in front of all of them and sort of like scream power. And it was sort of almost in a way to say, leave me alone. Yeah. But her anger at me was, why did you let this happen?
Yeah.
One of the hardest things I probably found healing from was the fact that I'd let all this abuse happen. Mm. But, you know, you can go logically, you can say, but at that age and this, that and the other, you don't know any better and you are powerless.
Yeah.
In a way,
you know? Yeah.
As a child, you're told how to be. You don't have power to sort of make choices, and that is our only power, I believe, is
to
get to choose.
It's not your fault, but it's amazing how as a child I feel like you blame yourself. You do. You find everything is egocentric. There's I've read that in a child's mind, it's easier to blame themselves because they haven't quite got the understanding like in their brain yet of like this could have happened for XYZ reasons externally. Instead, it always just comes back to, you know, this has happened to me. How did I let this happen? Or how did I let this person into my life? And we come back to self-blame, even though it might not be logical or realistic or whatever, but there is that aspect of our inner child who holds on to that, I feel.
Yeah, I agree. I think so. I think we don't have the capacity to understand.
Mm.
And what we do come in is, I suppose, believing that we just want to be loved.
Yeah.
And when we don't get that delivered, then we don't understand what's why. And then we sort of are taught to question. So then we question what's wrong with us.
Yeah.
And most of the time, if you're not getting the loving sort of thing from your parents, that sort of you do wonder what was wrong with you that they didn't sort of feel that you deserved that. So it brings up a whole sort of, you know, huge area of that, you know, not good enough, unlovable, all of that sort of stuff, I think. Yeah.
Did you have a journey around forgiveness on that?
I had a huge journey of forgiveness. Yeah, definitely. Mm. So I started off saying sort of with the compassion of I'm sorry. That tended to clear it for her, so she would sit down and talk with me.
Mm.
But forgiveness, I'm probably still, I do go back to the compassion, the forgiveness. I think they're things that will, you know, like a part of our aliveness. Creating space in us, we have to allow ourselves to be compassionate and to forgive.
Mm.
But the forgiveness, probably, I always thought forgiveness was about forgiving others for what they did.
Yeah.
Forgive but not forget, because you know, that's sort of that's one of the sort of things I was taught. And I believe that's quite a damaging way or a damaging concept to work from, because the forgiveness, you have to forgive yourself first.
Yeah, yeah.
And then once you understand, because if you can't forgive yourself first, then you actually don't understand what forgiveness feels like, and you don't understand what forgiveness is, so you're not sure what you're offering someone else. So as much as you can do lots of things and say, yes, I've forgiven you, I think I had to walk that path to forgive myself, really. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I feel like that was the missing piece of my trauma puzzle, was like there was always like, oh, should I forgive the person who did this to me? There was a bit of that questioning, but it wasn't until I realized that I'd held on to that self-blame and that was a part of one of my aspects, that I was like, oh my God, I've never forgiven myself. I thought to forgive them before I thought to forgive myself. Like, how ridiculous is that? Because it just never dawned on me that, self-forgiveness is, if not more important than forgiving others.
Yeah, and that's what I've learned over the years. Probably the last 5-6 years, I've worked really from the base where it's all about you. You're here for your life. Everyone in your life is just an offering. It's a potential. That's all. So you are you, and you are your space. And, you know, like you can hold space for others, but I, you know, even if you're doing that, you still have your space and then the space that you're holding for others. Mm. So, you know, I think we have to heal ourselves. And then if we heal ourselves, we start to recognize or find, you know, and that to me, that means find your truth.
Mm.
And what is true for you, not what's true for everyone else. We're taught so differently. We're taught to be positive about everything. We're taught that the shadow things are bad, you know. But do you know what? There's power in everything we are. So I started to really, I had to shift how I was working in a lot of ways with people and with myself, because I think a lot of the standard ways leave bits and pieces there, you know, so there's never that sort of full completion. And to me, that is that space inside you, you know, where you just no longer are crowded by suffering and trauma and shadow. And
yeah,
you know, and it's not scary to be angry.
Can you give an example of that? Like how things were lacking and what you were doing and how you had to up-level your energy work with people and yourself to kind of feel that?
I think the way I work evolved to a point where I've been taught in a mediumship to be very earth, you know, very connected, open up my chakras and go through the higher energy.
Mm-hmm.
I started to realize that the way I actually worked was very earth connected. So I had to open up to earth fully. And I was always sort of trained that that would be very grounding and sort of the energy wouldn't be as flowing. But in saying that, the way I was taught was amazing. So it gave me such an amazing foundation so I could play with it a bit. So then I started to realize that I worked from my heart space. And what I did was I went from my heart energy into the person in front of me.
Yeah.
And so that's the soul therapy side of things, because I walk into their heart space and then I become them.
Interesting.
So my experience of that person becomes what happens in the session. Mm. And I go where they're too scared to go. Because I am shadow work as a base, I'll go to the core of the shadow and bring that out and put it on the table and say, here, look at this. This is what you're experiencing. And I'll sort of gift them or guide them to recognize those parts of them. Now we work from shadow, and then we go and find the light side of all of that, which is your wisdom from it. And all is part of them. So no exclusions.
Yeah, you've like integrated the shadow into the light and found the little gem of wisdom that comes from that. I love that.
Yeah,
yeah.
I suppose, you know, I also started to love the idea that we work from heart. You know, we're walking towards, if people talk about fifth dimension or whatever, to me, you know, we're third dimension is head, mind, all of that. Fifth dimension is just working from the heart space where we work from trust and all of that, and truth, trust and truth and knowing and those amazing, magical, sort of mysterious words, because it's all just energy.
Yeah.
I think the potential for that is a lot more than, the way we were sort of working, or the way I was working, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're on the Heal Your Heart podcast, so you're in the right place for heart space. That makes perfect sense. I wanted to ask you about, so when you spoke about finding your truth and being able to express that, was there a journey for you around that?
I've always looked for truth. I sort of called myself a truth seeker if I had to call myself anything. I tend to piss people off because of it. I see the truth in people a lot of the time. So the journey of that was pretty much I stopped talking. I stopped engaging. I didn't really, I just wouldn't say things. I would, I sort of got to a point where I would ask people, what would you like, what do you need to hear from me so you're comfortable with me being in your life? and I would sort of be the observer. So I sort of walked that. I also, truth for me is only found in the space again, you know, probably the last sort of 3 years I started to just dive into space and recognize that that is our absolute, well, for me, what I believe now is that that space is our absolute truth, because when we sit in our space, we are nothing.
Yeah. It
means we have no attachment to anything. So there's no defining sense of anything. I'm not this, that, anything. So on that, and what started me on that was a meditation that I came across by Deepak Chopra called I can't remember what it's called, but it was like going into it's a short meditation that basically just starts with I am Natalie Jane Kennedy. And you drop the Kennedy, drop the Jane, drop the Natalie, drop the Am, drop the I, and just, well, who are you? Nothing. So in that, I sort of discovered that things, if I was in that space with nothing set up, then I could meet anybody, people that, like my husband, who I'd had a long-term relationship with, but I could meet them on a very blank slate. I had no expectations and no preconceived ideas of how things were going to play out. Now with him, good luck, because I have to remember and, you know, re-go into that a lot. But generally, yeah, I found truth would show itself then in the situation. Mainly truth for myself comes up the most. When I'm aware of that space, and also if I can't be space, I have an intention, you know, and I, this is sort of stuff that I work with and teach people, or, you know, guide them, because I think simplicity is truth. Space is truth. Simplicity is truth. Openness, you know, receiving is truth. Awareness is truth. So just having connections to all of those and deciding which one do I want to be today. You know, I want to be aware. Okay, then I'm just going to be aware. I'm going to receive. I want to receive everything. All of the things that I've listed actually are all interrelated anyway. So, you know, it's a bit like perceiving, knowing, being and receiving. So, you know, we have all of those working in together. So, can't just be one, they are all truth. So that makes sense.
Yeah, I've got a few more questions though. So when you're sitting in that space of non-being or of nothing, does that mean it's easier to call in like intuitive truth, or, you know, what you're asking, because it means that you're not attached to outcome, you're not attached to, you know, what you thought you knew?
Yep, that's the idea, to go to a place where you aren't attached to an outcome. Asking a question is quite good, but a question, as soon as you have an answer, you have just put in your limitations and boundaries. You just said this is what it is, and so you have just disallowed everything, every other potential it could have been and could have shown itself as. So, you know, and you sort of say, you ask the question of someone, you know, so they're having trouble in a relationship with their, you know, husband or partner or whatever, and, you know, so you're going to talk about finances, you know, and they sort of say, oh, yeah, oh, finances, you know, whatever. So whatever their scenario is, I'm not allowed to know about that or whatever. So that's a definitive answer. Now, if you go in with space, then you're going in with openness to receive whatever the potential of it is. So you're not closing anything down. Intuitively, it's more opening up to your consciousness, the universal mind. The answers for everything is out there, but all our knowledge gets in the way. So I sort of always sort of look at it like we've got a massive database. We're like a computer or a library, you know, one of the massive libraries, and all our stories are all our books in our library. And so every experience we've ever had is we've kept it. We were amazing, amazing human beings where we can remember majority of our experiences. And, you know, that's our vocabulary of our emotions, our words, our feelings, our physical experiences, pains, all of that sort of stuff.
Yep.
So the idea is that creates the story before you even walked something. That's the existence of, like you said, the unconscious mind will control scenarios and situations because you've already experienced this. So as soon as there's some thread of a story or recognition, so whether you feel something, so if I feel anger, I automatically own it as mine because I've had such a strong connection with anger over the years. And I assume it's mine. Now, what I should be doing is going into the space and just checking, is it mine? 99% of the time now it's not. It's got nothing to do with me. It's someone else's. It's a thread of energy that's out there and I've just happened to walk through it or into it.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I'm trying to conceptualize it in my experience, and I guess the connection I've drawn is like manifestation. When you've got an idea of where you want to go, what you want to do, but you only know from your experience of what you've seen or what you've witnessed of like, yeah, it's going to go this way and this outcome is going to happen for me to get to the next level. But really there's infinite amount of outcomes and the universe is probably building completely different story for you, but you have to be open to receiving that and just open to allowing that to drop in, as opposed to situating yourself as so focused on the one thing you thought would happen.
Yep. That's it. I think, you know, people, you know, law, you know, yeah, manifestation, you know, manifesting something, or even in relationships, if you look at it in that way, you know, so, you know, my husband used to like to drink a lot. So every time he'd say he was going out with his mates, I would just react in a contraction and I would go into the story of what I expected.
Yeah.
When he got home, right? And it was always like uncomfortable, a fight, an argument, whatever. And every time I got that delivered to me, because that's what I was expecting. And I would sit there waiting for him to get home, even if I went to bed, I'd still sort of not quite go, you know what I mean? So I was, it's like, you know, I'd set the stage. And so we set, our stage gets set with all the players and all the scenarios and, you know, even if you, you know, emotions, everybody has a role to play and you set the stage and off it goes. And then you go, why isn't this different? This time I said, no, it's not going to be, I'm not going to react, I'm not going to say anything, or, and you just bang, off you go. So it is about sort of, manifesting it differently will only happen when you have no concept of how it's going to go.
Yeah.
A lot of things tell you, you know, you need to know your outcome. You need to plan your steps. You need to have that connection to that. I used to, I mean, I've done all of that and it just never, I just kept getting the same sort of scenario. So I like to change things up. If it's not working, change it. If it's not working, change it. My kids hated it, you know. I mean, I think I used to change my hair colour so many times because it was just like my thing to do, you know. I need to be a different person. I'm going to change my hair first and then I look at the mirror and go, wow, I've got purple hair today. So, manifesting is interesting because it doesn't work mostly with everyone, because we, as much as we say we want this, we've already decided, one, we can't have it, we're not worthy of it, or it's like you said, it's got to go a certain way for us to accept it. So we, as soon as that comes in, we've just shut down the energetic pathway. It's out there. If you can think it and desire it, it's yours to have. The universe is abundant in it, it's absolutely there for you.
I feel like that's where trauma comes in. It's like these beliefs that we latch onto from trauma of, you know, I'm not worthy or I'm a bad person because of whatever happened to me. I feel like, and then we believe that, and that sets the stage for us not to be able to call in what we deserve, like the amazing things we deserve, because we've still got that mindset. Like, if I'm constantly in protection mode because I feel threatened by whatever it is, like, maybe, I don't know, some of my trauma has to do with someone who was like a tradie in the past, and then I meet another tradie and they might be a lovely person, but there's this part of me that's already gone tensed up and put my walls up going, I don't trust this person because of past experience. And then therefore I could have quite easily pushed them away when they might be my soulmate or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And so the unconscious is really playing the game.
Mm.
So they set the stage and go, just relax, conscious mind. Don't worry about it. You said you want this. No worries. I'll sort it.
Mm.
So we attract, you know, we have moments where we sort of might be going to sleep and go, oh, that'd be awesome if I had that. And then off we go to sleep. So we've left ourselves in that open state to it.
Yeah.
So something will present and you go, wow, I was just thinking about that, and check out this, you know, this has happened.
Mm.
And then in comes the stage, in comes the all the players and everything that's happened before, and be careful and watch out, and I bet you they're going to do this. And, you know, it sort of derails our real ability to, you know, one of the hardest things I found in healing was I can heal those things, heal the aspects, the stuff we've talked about.
Yeah.
One of the biggest things that I notice in people that I've worked with, sort of where they've committed to the healing and we've worked quite a bit together, they get to that place where they're sort of, they've got space, spaciousness in themselves, and they're starting to, you know, really wake up in the morning and they're enjoying life and they're breathing and everything's quite good and they like being very open and not contracted and all of that. But then they've got to actually start to integrate that new way of being into the world. And we haven't been taught to live that way.
Yeah.
So that's probably one of the hardest sort of parts of the healing is to learn how to then live, because you've just recreated yourself into a different person.
Yeah, I think it's one of the hardest lessons, learning to allow and just trust the universe instead of feel like the need to control outcomes by protecting and doing all those things to make sure you're okay and make sure things go the right way. Like, just letting go of control for a minute and going, I'm just going to, bring into this space, spaciousness into my life of, you know, it's going to be okay, and I don't feel the need to go and fix the outcome before it occurs.
Yeah. Yeah.
And is that the healing? Is that that we need to bring more spaciousness into our world? And is that how we stop self-sabotaging those manifestations from coming in?
I think definitely spaciousness, and then awareness. Awareness is really big. If we can have awareness, then we are recognizing the choices we're making, and we can catch ourselves before we choose to go down the story. It's like I said, you know, feeling something, reacting to it, and then if you've got the awareness, then, you know, time to sort of stop and go, oh, hang on, is this anger mine? I did that on the freeway the other day, because please, coming on, it was really packed and busy and I was running late for something, and, you know, as we're rushing and whatever at times, and all these people kept cutting in and everything, and I was getting very frustrated, and then this wave of anger came over me and I just wanted to scream, and then I did. I just screamed and I was like, oh, my God, and whatever, and then I finally sort of went, wow, check this out, whoa. And I just went, hang on. Now my natural, and it's interesting because you start to watch your natural way of being, or your natural thing you have been. Because my natural thing was, oh, that's terrible that I'm like that. I need to push that down, stop the anger. How am I going to do it? And I just went, oh, okay, anger can be there. Cool. What do you want to do? You need to yell. You need to do whatever. And then I went, and how about I just check it's mine?
Yeah.
And I did all that, and then I sort of asked. It was like, so giving it the freedom.
Mm.
allows it to have, you know, any fear-based shadow stuff. If you say to it, hey, welcome, come on.
Mm.
Most of our, we're taught to push it down, not be that. I'd be angry, don't be annoyed, don't be frustrated, you know.
You're not allowed to do that.
Be nice, be a good person, be whatever. So if you just acknowledge it, if you're aware of it and you say, hey, welcome, come on, what do you need?
Yep.
Then it loses its power.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Like, you know, popping a balloon, it just goes, oh, okay. It's like a little kid, you know, any attention is good attention. Even if they get in trouble, it's attention. So for them, you know, they just want that. And our aspects, our energies, all of that, everything wants to be noticed. We all just want someone to go, hello. So the awareness is key, I believe.
Definitely. Yeah.
And then the step to say, I'm going to have space is the next thing. That's how where I'm at now is, yeah, absolutely. Because then if I can say, okay, well, this is, I'm feeling this or I'm seeing this or I'm noticing this, but I actually want to maintain a beautiful sense of spaciousness within me, because otherwise I start to get overwhelmed. I have to start to make choices about things that I'm a bit confused about. There's too much going on. I have to know where I'm going. I have to find my purpose. I have to, spaciousness, I can just, it almost can sound a bit lazy. It's not, because I find now most of the time we, you know, it's always that journey of learning and evolving. I think that's what reminds us, or reminds me anyway. But I think, yeah, the space can allow me just to sort of be. And then, like you said, the trust then comes in where I will action when I need to action. So now I do find myself sort of in the moment going, I just start to do something, whether it be create a new workshop or rearrange an area to shift the energy. I do, or to do a painting to release an aspect that's coming up, or, you know, a sense of something that needs to be voiced, but I'm not hearing it, so I'm going to paint it to see it. Or if I don't have space, that doesn't come forward.
When you say space, it makes me think of like almost like when you do breath work or when you do meditation and you get to that Zen place of like no racing thoughts, of just peace.
Yeah.
Does that fit with your experience?
Yeah, it's pretty much, I think that's the beginning of it. You've got to start there where you're always going to have. Interesting, when I started meditating, it took me like 2 years to be able to meditate like for 40 minutes. I was so bad because of the dialogue.
You think it'd be a simple skill, but it's a lot more complex than
I know. And I was very judgmental. I think the space is, you know, there's always going to be thoughts. It's what are you going to give your attention to? So what you give your attention to gets powerful. I used to love, you know, if I do energy healing on someone, I sort of on and off do this, but I went through a stage where I would get them to just find space in their body, physical body. Where's space in your physical body? And just get them to scan through their head down wherever. And it's sort of the first place you go to, and then just sit in that and just expand it and expand it and expand it, but keep your attention there. And then notice when you wander, and again, it sort of teaches awareness as well. Notice when you wander off and you start to think about, you know, what am I going to cook for dinner? What time is it? Gosh, I hope this doesn't go too long. Notice when that's happening and then come back. Where was I? Oh, that's right. I was in my right hip in space. So expanding. It's sort of places you in definitely connection with your calmer state, because there's less demand in space. And so you can take a breath, like breath work ideal to use it, because, you know, you can breathe easily. And, you know, conscious breathing is quite amazing. It's very different from unconscious breathing, which is what we do all the time. When you actually actively look at your breath and notice your breath and consciously breathe, it can take you down into that space. It can take you into your heart space, into the ground, wherever. Yeah.
And then once you've done all of that fabulous hard work, I feel like then it's integrating that into your current day-to-day life. Like, you can be the yogi who's mastered it and sitting there, but it's like, how do we bring that out into the world where there's triggers and there's challenges and there's things being thrown in our face? Do you have any advice on that?
Space.
Big question, I know.
You know, probably the biggest thing I do now is allow. I'm working with that essence of allowance at the moment in a big way, and having no point of view and awareness of everything I am choosing.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and, you know, finding the choices that feel good. And not all light stuff is good. You know, if I have something I need to sort of confront in my life that I need to finish or I need to complete or do, you know, that it doesn't necessarily have a feeling good about it, but it's really good to sort of step into it in that moment and complete it or confront it or whatever.
Yeah.
And if I, I find, you know, the integration really is, that's the only way I've been able to sort of find to do it. And it's training, training. If we look at, often say to clients, you know, people come and they sort of do two or three sessions and they're like, why aren't I there? But it's, well, there's a commitment. How long have you been who you've been? How many years have you practiced and committed to being that person who doesn't work for you? You know, and our biggest thing that, or the biggest thing I see, and I definitely did this, and this is probably my biggest revert to, is working for everyone else. You know, I'm a carer at heart. You know, the nurse, and before that, I used to volunteer when I was younger. You know, old people's homes, and you know, all these different things, and so to sort of actually create it so you are working for you.
I feel like it's so easy in this day and age, go to work, come home, talk to your partner, talk to this person, to not have that little bit of space for you. Like, I think we forget to give ourselves that time and space and that, what about me today? How am I checking in with ourselves? How am I feeling today? Where am I at today? You know, do I need to go out and ground outside in nature, and like, is that what my energy is calling me to do today? I think we just lose that in this Western culture sometimes because we're just so busy being productive and doing all these things for everyone else and being the carer.
Yeah,
that we miss that, and then to come back to it is almost like a revelation in a way.
Yeah, definitely. If I start to get lost, the first go-to for me is the question, what do I need? And a lot of the times I find that really hard to answer. So I have to sort of, you know, I have to then find the space.
Yeah.
I can't find that answer. What do I need? Not what anyone else needs. And that was really hard to begin with, to ask that question, because I am very much geared towards what does everyone else need, make sure they're all okay. Then at the end of my day, cool, time for me. Okay, now what do I, I'm exhausted, I'm going to sleep. So
yeah,
you know, like you said, you know, finding that slice of time. And, you know, and we also have age, and, you know, evolving age as we go through different stages of our lives, getting, you know, younger, growing up, adolescent, learning, you know, meeting partners, getting married, maybe having kids, or living that sort of stage of your life, and then you go into retirement or whatever. There's, you know, different jobs, what do you do, that and the other. So, yeah, commitment to your journey, commitment to you. And probably one of the biggest energies, the most beautiful ones to work with, which we haven't sort of talked about, but is gratitude. Gratitude's an amazing energy to shift things, you know, invite it, entice it, seduce it, demand, request gratitude. You can really, open yourself up to finding that space in you without actually having to work at it.
I had a lot of grief depression when I was younger, and I found my key out of that depression was gratitude. If I could find some link of gratitude, I could find a way to feel happy again, even in the darkness.
Yeah, absolutely. I learned for a long time, actually. I used to go big picture, because we're sitting in that small picture, it's all about us. And we can fall into the hole of, you know, the behaviors and the path and the story and all of that, of what we have been. So, you know, finding that, that makes a difference as well.
I just want to circle back for a second, if you don't mind. I'd love to hear about your painting journey. As someone who is not super artistic myself, when you said you painted an aspect, what was that like for you? Was that healing? Did that help that aspect? Like, can you explain that?
I've been an artist forever. And so most of my therapy when I was younger was painting. So I have a lot of paintings. I've never done anything actually with them. I'm always creating art and doing things. I just love it. I used to paint myself out of my shadow. Was always quite astounded at what I painted, because it was always, I use very bold, bright colors, lots of textures. I get really messy. I like using my fingers and diving in and just whatever's at hand. And so quite an expressive painter. And it's interesting, the deeper the aspect that I work with, or the deeper the shadow space, the quicker the painting is produced.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah. So that one that I talked about, that was, I did that in 2 days, and there's about 7 layers.
Wow.
So I kept painting on top, on top, on top, on top. Using different mediums and different things like that. It's a young child, and she's like this, and she's just screaming. But it's interesting, because different people see different things. Some see her roaring in her power, voicing her power, and other people see her anger and her sadness. So
Is that the one up in the space, or a different one?
Yeah, that's the one.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
That took 7 years to come about.
Wow.
And so to work with her, I had to paint her out.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, because it wasn't about her. I don't know how to explain it. It was a bit of a revelation. Because she, all the other aspects, a lot of the, you know, it's about, you know, integrating, integrate and bring their wisdom in. With her, I had to paint her out, and she's there. So she doesn't, it's not about integrating that particular aspect, or definitely, well, not at the moment anyway. Yeah. But I usually start, when I do an artwork like that, I'll start with, the energy that is coming forward and that's, I'm surrounded by, I've become. You know, I've got ones called disappointment, resentment. So they are all the shadow spaces.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do go quite sort of deep in the soul part. That's their soul. They're bits of my soul, really.
Yeah.
I don't really remember what I've painted. I used to always laugh, because I would set up my little trolley thing with the colors and everything, all my bits and pieces, and then go into the state of starting something, especially if it's a quick one, and I'd come out of it 4 or 5 hours later, and everything I'd set up was still there, and I would have stuff all over the other place, on the floor, everywhere, which just, so what I thought I was going to paint, I never did.
Yeah, you just went inwards, and it was almost like an out-of-body experience. That's so interesting. I love that. Your own version of art therapy, in a way.
painting. I started to do soul paintings with people, like painting their soul energy, and sort of connecting more to a soul purpose in a way. That was amazing. Yeah.
Is that you painting for them, or is that them painting for them, out of curiosity?
No, me painting their soul.
Wow.
But everybody, I'm just always amazed at the magic of how different everybody is.
Definitely. So, do you still do those now, or?
If they come forward, I do. Yeah. So never really. I haven't really put that out there so much. I tend to do a lot of things, but my consistent thing is I work with people. So I'm sort of just starting up again with, you know, the concept of getting those things up and going again and see where I'm at. So, they're amazing. Yeah. And like just the story that came with them, quite healing in a way as well, I suppose.
Yeah, it sounds fantastic. Like a bit of spirit art, your soul therapy stuff.
Yeah, like I did train in spirit art. So like paint, drawing people's guides and things like that. So that was fun. I used to love doing that. But the soul painting, that was interesting. So symbols and connections to different energies and levels.
I love that. So is there anything else you'd like to share today with the listeners?
No, I think you've covered everything.
Thank you. It's a beautiful journey and story to listen to.
Shadows of Self is the name that I work with. You can sort of find me on my webpage, Shadows of Self, my email is natalie@shadowsofself.com.au. I have a Facebook page, which every week I'm creating a word of the week and a quote which goes with it. So I connect into sort of the energy that we're working with on the sort of picture more from a healing base. So I usually write what I'm getting and what's happening, and then there's something that you can do, maybe a recorded a visualization in one. There's a challenge to sort of, do certain things, actions to take, things to sort of work with. So just every week, I used to run classes, psychic development classes and meditation groups weekly, and I always had a word or an energy that oversaw everything that we worked with, and it always filtered into every sort of everything I did. It was pretty fascinating. So, so if you want to look at that, that'd be cool. If you want a bit of guidance, have a look. It gives you an idea of me, I suppose. And you can find my information on any of those pages, and there's Instagram as well. I think they're just Shadows of Self.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. Thank you, Chiara, for sharing your story with us today.
Lovely.